Live in simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban mountains of Luxor, Egypt. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward.
Needless to say, the beast was stunned. A whip crack ripped his rumpet tail, and the beast was done. He asked us, "Be you angels?" And we said, "Nay, we are but men." Fuck.
John, be you an angel?
No, I'm a demon. I like being a demon.
Oh, that was the answer I was looking for. Nay,
sorry.
We are but men. Rock.
Demons. Demons.
Hey, good evening, folks. This is Scotty Roberts over here in the Great White North, coming to you from a hidden corn shack deep in the fields of Wisconsin, while John is over there in Sweden right now.
In a real shack.
In a real shack, in the snow with the midnight sun. You're having midnight sun, aren't you?
No, we're not having anything here. It's just pitch black.
Or is that in the summer? When does that flip-flop?
Oh, I don't know. It's a Swedish thing. I always meant to ask you, what is a corn shack?
A corn shack.
Is that where you make moonshine?
Well, that is one of the uses. It would more properly be called a corn crib. That's the little sheds that you see up in the cornfields where they stack husks of corn and things like that.
Isn't a crib something you put a baby in though?
Yes, it is. Well, this is
so. Why would you call a shack a crib?
Oh, because we're not British.
Just asking. It's just very confusing.
What do farmers have over there? What are the little sheds they have when they stack up their corn?
We call them a barn.
No, that's a bigger version. The barn is where you put livestock and you feed livestock, and you can have a silo or you have silage and all and grains and all of that. A corn crib is usually pretty small. It's about the size of a typical apartment bedroom, you know.
So a shed.
8 or 10 by 12 feet, something like that.
That's still a shed.
In it. Yeah, it's a shed. Yes.
Or a lean-to.
Not quite a lean-to because it has four walls.
A shelter.
A shelter.
Something that keeps the rain off and the elements.
A roofed shelter for corn husks.
It's not a crib or a manger, though, is it?
It's not quite a manger, although...
Not that I'm picking on you, of course.
If you want me to go biblical on manger, I can.
No,
you know,
God, no, don't you dare. No.
Because, you see, John... According to the Gospel of Mark.
Oh, please. No, it's too early.
Jeff Daugherty here to talk about that.
Well, of course, he's yeah. Oh, and we're going to go down that route. I don't want to be nasty to Jeff.
So let me ask you. Everybody here knows that you are an archaeologist, that you and your wife are archaeologists, and you have a site in Egypt, the site of Gebel El Silsila, which we've talked about ad infinitum on this show.
And you've forgotten to mention, of course, that I'm debonair, handsome, swashbuckling,
well,
intelligent.
Something like that, yes. Well,
a stud.
You're studly, intelligent, and debonair in that Mr. Bean sort of way. Yes. He's your doppelganger.
Moving on. What was your
moving
question?
Moving on. Now, the Obama administration came out and said that the number one concern of Americans is global warming or climate change. I don't buy that. And I talk to a lot of people. I hear a lot of people concerned about ISIS, concerned about what's going on in the Middle East, concerned about this whole, and some of them don't even know it as far as saying they're trying to establish a caliphate. People don't know all the details, but they hear of all these stories in the news of all the killings and all the things that are going on, what they're referring to as the lone wolf killings, are related to Islamic extremism, radical extremism. And I have yet to meet one person who tells me, oh, I'm really concerned about climate change. Do you sweat it out and wake up in a cold sweat at night going, Oh, my God. It's not snowing today, and it should be. What's happening to my planet? What is my green footprint?
No, I don't.
Well, I don't either.
It's one of those things. I've actually, being of that generation, because, you know, I am far much younger than your good self, sir. I'm of that generation, of that ilk, of when the climate change and the ozone layer came out. And I must admit, when that first came out, that frightened me. And I saw the BBC,
the
ozone newsroom.
Thing. You could use spray cans of spray paint or anything like that anymore, anything that had
CFC reductions and so forth. And there was new fridges coming out. And
I remember in the 1980s, actually, you mentioned a key word there, a fridge. I was spray painting an old refrigerator, and I was spray painting it white. And it was in the 80s, and I said, oh, man, I am depleting the ozone just to get the perfect tone on this refrigerator.
Yeah, and I must admit, back then, it worried me. But then that kind of slowly passed, really. And common sense kicked in, and yes. I became educated, and I could see that the Earth was going through some kind of cycle. Do you know, actually, all joking aside, this is when I started listening to Whitley Strieber.
Oh, yes.
And
I was just reading something about Whitley Strieber just tonight.
Because when I listened to him in the early days, that's when he was talking about the coming ice age.
Yes.
That immediate switchover when, you know, I forget which museum it's in where they got that woolly mammoth, which was pulled from the tundra with food still in its mouth, where it was actually masticating. It was still eating the food, and yet it was frozen kind of instantaneously. And they talk about this switchover. And then they brought out that film, didn't they? What was it? The Day After Tomorrow and so forth. Who was in that? Dennis somebody.
It was John Cusack. Oh, and
no,
Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid,
Cusack.
Oh, I'm thinking 2012 was Cusack.
Yeah,
yes.
You're 20 years out.
I guess I am.
But
that's because I'm so much older than you.
Oh, but it's okay. Don't worry. I let you off. Do you need?
I'll try not to worry. Yeah, I'm gonna go take a nap. Could you take over now?
Yeah, that's okay. But no, that's the only thing I can remember is going back to Whitley Strieber and looking at the coming ice age and where he was talking about that flip and the, what's it called, the North Atlantic Current and so forth and how that was changing and how that
things
was
like that,
the
yeah,
patterns.
How the and how the poles are shifting as well.
Yeah,
certain degrees.
Wait,
no, I was just going to say they're shifting. I think it's been. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was something like 12 to 13 or 14 degrees they have shifted the poles, and they have found that a lot of the runways, like places in Sweden where you are now, that the true north of runways that were built 30, 40 years ago are now off of true north by several degrees, and the same in North America. And so they're finding there's a polar shift that's taking place, but they have also found that polar shift has something to do with the natural ebb and flow of the planet itself. And the same thing with cyclical, what did they say? When global warming first came out, the whole talk was the temperatures are never going to be as low. And one of these days, we're not even going to see snow. Now, tell that to the East Coast of America nowadays. They're just getting hammered this winter. We all had the polar vortexes last winter. Then you'll hear some scientists say, yeah, that's just like an adverse effect of global warming. You're going to get the cold. But then it all started changing. And now it's no longer global warming. It's now climate change.
Wasn't there a report out not so long ago that showed that the scientists actually got their data wrong?
Yes, there is.
This is why I don't really get into the climate discussion, because I don't believe we're being told the full truth, because there's too much disinformation out there, and I don't think enough correct information to actually form an educated viewpoint. One can look at it and say, as you quite rightly said, Scotty, you know, it's the ebb and flow of the planet, and we go through these different cycles and so forth. The magnetic poles are shifting here, there, and everywhere, and we've got our solar flare activity, we've got our seismic activity, and so forth. So I think if we live our lives in a more harmonious way with Mother Earth, I'm sure that a harmony can be had. I mean, we are the possibly the most destructive species on the planet. I mean, that goes without saying.
Well, certainly, we are the only species that can take and create quote unquote synthetic things out of natural things. We create waste. There's so much that we do that look at plastics alone off of oil. We make plastics. We make all these different things out of petroleum. Look at the waste that we create. Look at the barges we send out to sea that are filled with waste because there's no more landfill space. We are a wasteful species, and I don't think that's good stewardship of the planet. And certainly, and not long ago, we just read that that piece from Michael Crichton. I was trying to think of his name, who wrote Jurassic Park. Out of the introduction to his book Jurassic Park, which we're all familiar with the movie, but he talked about what magnificent folly that we think we can destroy the planet. The planet has survived, and he goes through a whole litany of geologic things that this planet has survived. And he said that really what it comes down to is the worst thing that man could do to the planet is make it uninhabitable for man for now. Mm-hmm. But somewhere along the way, life, and he says, even if we set off 1,000 A-bombs all around the world, nuclear weapons, and totally wiped out all life on the planet as we know it, and the Earth sizzled for 10,000 years, and then another 10,000 years of nuclear winter, there's still going to be life that springs up and survives it, because the planet will survive whatever we can do with it, do to it. I think the big question is, can we survive what we do to it? The planet will, we might not. So that's, I think, where the responsibility has to come in. So, and I'm not a big, I don't know a whole lot about talking about global warming or climate change and so on. I just know some of the talking points that are out there and how it has been found that it is a huge political movement. And I do like to point out how I thought that it was very interesting that Al Gore, the former vice president to Bill Clinton and somebody who ran against, I think he ran against Bush, and he ran once or twice, I think. But he came out with his film, 15 years ago, 12 years ago, something, An Inconvenient Truth, and was talking about our green footprint. And sure, yes, he raised awareness to a certain extent, but he raised awareness from a false beginning point. And at the same time was driving caravans of SUVs to go where he was going, was flying his own private jet to go where he was going, had a house that they said his mansion used up something like $2,400 a month in heating bills or electric bills and things like that. And so, you know, they did all this study, and here's a guy that's pushing, you know, tighten your belt and improve your green footprint, yet he was one of the worst offenders on a personal level. So to me, it all comes out as to be politics and things like that.
I think it's another thing to just keep us busy and keep us controlled and confined and defined, along with everything else.
I believe you are absolutely correct.
Did you know? Just before we go to our guest, this wonderful guest, by the way, I'm really looking forward to.
Me too.
Interview. I'm really looking forward to that. The Ukraine.
Yes.
Have you done any home? Do you know your history of the Ukraine, by the way?
A little bit. My stepfather, when I was a young child, was Ukrainian.
Oh, here we go.
A man named Vasil Nikolajenko.
We won't hold that against you.
And my sister, who was actually my half sister, was his daughter, my mom's daughter, and his daughter. Mm-hmm. And I remember being baptized in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church when I was 5. He brought us in to be baptized. And was teaching us. He had us in Ukrainian school where we were learning the Ukrainian language at age 4 and 5. And none of which I remember, except I remember something that sounded much like "Так вогашна." I have no idea what that means. I remember That's about it. Babushka, Baba. I remember Dadishki was what we called his father. So that's about it. I know nothing else.
So you've never heard of the Charge of the Light Brigade?
Yes, I have.
Well, there you go. That was in Crimea, which has just been annexed and is now back again. Wonderful. And when I think about that, well, wonderful. Pith. When I think about
sarcasm.
Did you know that the British Army lost over 20,000 men alone in that one battle?
I did not know that.
16,000 or thereabouts, though, were lost to disease.
16,000 of the 20,000?
Yeah.
All right.
And
so
France,
are you talking... go ahead. What?
No, I was going to say, it's just disease-related from wounds and so forth, because don't forget, the Crimea War was the famous one where Florence Nightingale perfected the bedside treatment and the treatment of wounds and so forth to keep down disease and infections and so forth. But what my point getting to is that we talk about the vets a lot. We see that in the news recently, where we talk about the vets of Iraq and Afghanistan and so forth, and quite rightly so. When do we stop thinking? When is enough time passed to no longer remember the war dead of previous wars and their sacrifice for the salvation or for the safety or the freedom of a certain civilization or person or people or race of people? And then it just be passed into the sands of time.
It's interesting.
When you think about it, it's not even 200 years have passed. And all those men, I mean, France, I forget how many France lost. France lost tens of thousands of men. And so did the rest of the coalition that fought Russia. I think Greece was on the side of Russia. I think they sent 1,000 of their mercenary troops over there. Greece. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, folks, if you don't know what we're talking about with the Light Brigade, Alfred Lord Tennyson was the one who wrote the famous poem, The Charge of the Light Brigade. And if you didn't learn this in school, I'm not going to read the whole poem, but it's the one that starts out, half a league, half a league, half a league onward. All in the valley of death rode the 600, forward the Light Brigade, charge for the guns, he said. Into the valley of death rode the 600. And it goes on, and if you remember the poem, it's stormed at with shot and shell while horse and hero fell, that they had fought so well, came through the jaws of death back from the mouth of hell, all that was left of them, left of 600. And then it ends with this on the note that you're talking about. When can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made, all the world wondered. Honor the charge they made, honor the Light Brigade, noble 600. And yet
it's fallen into the ends of time already. Because we're right now, we've got this very I love the way the news portrays it. They're saying it's holding this truce, this ceasefire. Yet they're still fighting. They're still fighting over this blessed bloody train station. There is no ceasefire. There is no truce. They're still fighting. If you go back even further in time, did you know that the Crimeans actually exported, now get this, they exported over 2 million slaves?
I did not know that.
Out of Russia and out of the Ukraine to the East.
So I did
it wasn't
not know that.
Africans, it was white slaves. They exported 2 million white slaves into the East.
You know, these are the things that when you talk about atrocities that go on and the things that the United States is now facing and the West is facing, you've got all those people who will say, well, we don't have good ground to stand on because we've committed our own atrocities in the past and things like that. And my answer to that argument has always been, look, I am not responsible for the actions of my ancestors. I'm not responsible for what they did. I'm not responsible for anybody's atrocity. You cannot lay that at my feet. My nation that exists today, none of the people that run this government today or that live in this country today had anything to do with ancient atrocities.
But we do have a responsibility.
What is the responsibility that you think we have? Is it a corporate responsibility then?
We have a responsibility to acknowledge what took place in the past. We have a responsibility to acknowledge the atrocities that we may have incurred or acted upon. Because if we don't acknowledge our past, how on earth are we meant to know what to do in the future?
Well, that's very true. But acknowledgement and taking blame on ourselves are two completely different things. Yeah,
There's no taking blame there. It's taking responsibility and it's taking acknowledgement. And I think those are two things, very important things. But what gets me is that in less than 350 years, we've seen a state, two states, the Crimean and Ukraine, go from one of the largest slave traders out of Europe to one of the most famous battles of all time, which was, by the way, a complete military blunder. Because
that was kind of like duck your head and charge.
Well, he went for the wrong battery, didn't he? He didn't realize
he went
for the wrong battery. But anyway, that aside, and yet here we are today, and nothing's really changed. We're still fighting over the same piece of land. We're still fighting over the same seaport. And you start to think, when will we learn? When will that change take place? When will mankind actually wake up? And I'm not getting namby-pamby. I'm not getting all leftist.
I know where you're going with this.
But when will we actually wake up and say, I don't think we really need to fight over this anymore, guys. You just take it. If you want to use it, use it. If you don't mind, I'd like to use it on a Sunday. You know.
Well, the problem is the realization that would have to become to in that, though, is you can have one side do that all you want. It's like this. Let's say you have let's bring it down to a kind of a brass tacks, really close in type of an illustration. You have a husband and wife that are fighting, and one of them says to the other, I'm done fighting. Let's move on from this. Let's not be in this state. And the other one wants to fight. What do you have? Do you have then two people fighting? You have a war that is then perpetuated by one side.
I was going to take it a bit deeper.
All right.
I was going to take it to another level, and this would be a good way for us to go to our break. And that is, I think, and the audience will probably crucify me for saying this.
Oh, here we go.
However, I'm going to say it anyway. Multiculturalism is possibly the biggest mistake of the 19th, 20th, and 21st century. It is a failed plan. And it's about time somebody somewhere really stood up and said, I think we need to redefine what it means to have multicultural societies.
I've got a great response for that I would love to get into an hour-long conversation with you on. Because
I knew that I'd get you.
You knew that, and you always do that to me when we have like 2 minutes left in the segment. But I also want to say, do you know the president I would vote for in a heartbeat is you? Yes, you can't because you were born on foreign soil, foreigner. But and you would know how to handle yourself. The 4th of July would send you again weeping into the fetal position in the corner. But my thinking is this. If there was a man that stood up, a man or a woman, a candidate that stood up and said political correctness is a bunch of bullshit. And we need to do what? Bull? The S part of that. Well, that was a B word, actually, because I used it as one word. But if somebody got up and actually said that and said political correctness is the cancer of our society and we need to eradicate it. Not to, and I already hear the arguments that would come and say, oh, so you're all for the suppression of a race or the suppression or slavery or killing gays or something like that. All those things would automatically come out. I'd say absolutely not. But I think that there are different ways to handle it than political correctness, which is generally referred to, not referred to. I see political correctness as the baseless charge over substance, silliness over substance.
This is where we get into the discussion, and we will go out to break in a minute because I can hear Rocky thumping his desk.
Yeah, he's thumping back over there.
Back to identity. We are at this present moment actually suffering from an identity crisis on a global scale. We don't know who we belong to, who we are. We've become as one because of our technological advancements, and that has thrust us into this oneness too quickly.
Well, I would agree with you there.
It's like a child, like a baby who's crawling and all of a sudden gets up and starts running the half-mile sprint.
And this is why I think you see all this inhumanity toward man out there, because everybody's trying to push what they are, what they believe, what they want, and nobody really knows anymore, especially when you incorporate multiculturalism, political correctness. Nobody really knows what they're supposed to say, how they're supposed to act, what you can even say or not say, because the thought police will nail you. So,
exactly.
Again, another topic, but I did want to talk about the 21 Coptic Christians that were beheaded on the beach in Libya. But have no time. We're out of time here. But
my heart goes out to Egypt and the people of Egypt.
Absolutely.
And it's horrendous.
And may horrendous. President Sisi, I don't say this tongue in cheek. I hope he doesn't end up like Anwar Sadat for the things he's saying, because he's really calling for religious revolution over there.
You watch the next couple of weeks as he marches his troops over into Libya.
It will be very interesting. Well, folks, that's all the time we got in this first break. We're going to be coming back after the bottom of the hour with our very special guest, Chip Coffee. And if you aren't familiar with Chip, I don't know why you'd even be here tonight. We'll talk about Chip when we come back. So, folks, you hang on. We're going to go out to break. We'll be right back after these messages.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger, as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available, and they are already starting to book up. So go to exodusreality.com and get your place reserved today. That's exodusreality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
Hello, my name is Patrick Sullivan. I'm a boxer and a Guinness drinker. Now, it's come to my attention that you lads in America only drink Guinness on special occasions. So let me tell you about this special occasion that finds me drinking a pint of Guinness. I was fighting Michael the Hammer Halleck when the referee stopped the fight in the fourth round due to excessive bleeding. As the referee led poor Hammer, covered in blood, to his corner, all I could think about was I was going to win for the first time in 57 professional fights. However, the referee soon made the discovery that it was my blood covering old Hammer. Now, what can I say? I'm a bleeder by nature. Now, you might be thinking, oh, in 57 is not much of a special occasion. And that's my point exactly. You can drink Guinness any day. Sure, it's dark, but it drinks smooth and easy. You may even find It refreshes your spirit. So don't be so precious with your pints. Grab a Guinness, because it's good to drink.
Guinness Stout, imported by Guinness Fast Import Company, Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, and if you think the Irish only bleed Kelly Green, just come to one of my fights.
When we make Beyond Natural dry dog and cat foods, we start with real meat as the first ingredient. We leave out corn, wheat, and soy. And we own where our dry food is made. 100%. Can other brands say all that? For nutrition you can trust and your pet will enjoy. Does your food go beyond? Learn more at PurinaBeyond.com.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to ScottAllenRoberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, ALANROBERTS.com to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be bridging the gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields, from ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
Johnny Roberts, and we are back here on the Intrepid Radio program, and my cohort, Dr. John Ward, who always likes to talk over my inns. John, I'm gonna go on strike one of these. I'm gonna boycott inns, and you're going to do them all.
It wouldn't matter, would it? Because I would still be saying, "And we're back."
And I'd interrupt you. Here, let's try it, John. We're just coming back in live now. Now you do your in. Go.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to do it now?
Yeah, do it now.
And we are back.
Oh, hey, this is Scotty. There, did I interrupt you at the right point?
Did I break
the flow of your... Oh, you're like my child.
I'm old enough to
Even though you could be my grandfather. Well, folks,
so rude.
There is so much that we like to talk about when we get on the show. And as y'all know, the first half an hour of this program, we get into our current events and all the things that are going on. There's so much we want to talk about, so we hated to leave you hanging with that dire news with ISIS and so on. But let's put that aside for now, because we've got what I would consider an amazing guest. This is a man that I've known for quite a number of years now, and I met him doing the paranormal event circuit several years ago, I think 2006 or 7 or something like that, and it's all a blur after that. But Chip Coffey is with us tonight, and I want to tell you a little bit about him if you don't already know. Chip Coffey is known worldwide. I think he's become one of those household names. And you see these psychic medium types that get in the news or get on TV and get all this, and they become so unapproachable and so, I don't want to use the iconic, they become so big that they become too big for themselves even. And they are people that start to take on, for me, that mode of not being genuine anymore. And if there is genuine there, it's so evaporated into the spotlight that it's hard to see the real guy or the real woman. Now, Chip Coffee is somebody that I have known for a number of years and somebody that I have always found is, if I needed to call Chip, I can call Chip, and he's there, and he talks to me, and he's always been a friend. He is approachable. He's a wonderful man. He's a clairvoyant. He's a clairaudient. He's a clairsentient. If you don't know what all those things are, we'll have him talk about that a little bit. And he's fully conscious medium, meaning he doesn't pass into a trance and flop on the floor for you. Although he could, I suppose, if he wanted to. He's blessed to have what he calls a God-given ability to provide others with insight, guidance, direction. And as a medium, he's also able to reconnect with his clients and loved ones who have crossed over. And he's the great-grandson. And I want, Chip, I want you to tell us a bit about this when we get here. Chip is the great-grandson of the famed Native American medicine woman, Minnie Sue Morrow Foster, whose own amazing gifts were widely hailed in the early part of the 20th century. He's a firm believer in God and God's angels, and Chip believes that miracles, great and small, happen each and every day. And Chip, welcome to the Intrepid Radio program.
Hello, Scotty Roberts. Hello, John. How are you both?
We're doing well, sir.
Fantastic. I think the last time I talked to you via radio interview was in 2011. You were in the very first issue of Intrepid Magazine, the preview issue that we put out. And you were on you adorned the cover, and we did a radio interview at the same time. And that's the last time I talked to you officially in front of an audience. So it's great to have you back after that.
It's lovely to be back with you. You know, I thank you for those kind words of introduction that you gave me. And, you know, we have known each other for a long time. We started out getting to know each other back in the day when we were doing events together. And,
that's right.
You know, it was always good to hang out. And, you know, when we go to these events, during any downtime that we have to go grab food and a drink or coffee or whatever and share the time with people, because, you know, that we who are on the road together develop this really nice, genuine community. And many of us do like each other. So, you know, that's always fun to be out on the road and see people that you care about.
It sure is. Now, Chip, you did a little event that I also did, and it was in. There's been a lot of scuttlebutt about this event, the mind twisting, mind bending event in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Now, do you, as a psychic medium, sense that any of us were brainwashed while we were there?
I don't know that I was brainwashed while I was there. I felt. At that event particularly, I was very grateful to have been invited to that event.
Me too.
But I kind of felt like a fish out of water. You know, there were so many people for me there who were very much into UFOs and alien abductions and things like that.
Sorry to interrupt you, Nicole. Are you referring to the gathering?
Yes, the gathering.
Ah.
Yeah, and there were so many people there that were so into alien abductions and things like that, that I felt kind of like a fish out of water. And I must admit that although I enjoyed the time that I was there and the camaraderie and getting to meet people and the kindness with which I was treated while I was there, I kind of left wondering, what did I just do? What did I just experience?
Yeah.
And why the hell was I here?
And for folks who don't know, this was put on by a wealthy person out in Pennsylvania who threw an event with no public invited. He just sent out invitations to people within these fields, ufological field, spiritualist or metaphysical field, and so on. And I was surprised. I saw Chip there. He was surprised. We rode the bus together at one point to dinner. And
this is the event where Thomas Fusco has absolutely no memory.
Oh, yes, he has no memory. I've heard all kinds of things out there, though, about people believing on a very deep level that it was all done to mind bend people and to brainwash, and some people really believe this, and I don't mock it at all. I've just wondered if you experienced any of that, or if you've lost your mind too.
you know what? The only way that I've lost my mind is the way I normally lose my mind, and that is just sometimes being too busy or too old, whichever, I don't know. But, you know, I didn't feel, as far as being brainwashed, I wasn't fed the Kool-Aid when I was at that meeting, or at least I didn't drink any of the Kool-Aid when I was at that meeting, if there was anything served. You know, I just kind of took it as, you know, oh, this is a nice time. It's nice to meet these people and, you know, talk to some folks and get to know these people. But, again, I kind of left wondering, you know, they said they were going to publish some results on the meeting, and I never really saw any of those results that were published by what if there were any conclusions drawn or any ideas that were formulated. So I just kind of, you know, I really haven't thought much about it since it happened. But as far as coming back and feeling like that there was a shift in my own self or anything dramatic like that, no, not really.
Well, let me ask you, while we're on that point, you're a psychic medium and you deal with people who've passed, you deal with spirit, you deal with all of that kind of, I would almost call that the here and now of the spirit world. This is, you're dealing with people and people that are grieving and people that have lost people, and you communicate with them. What do you think, or have you ever had any experience with that whole other alien or abductee type of end of things? Have you had any clients or dealt with this at all, or personally experienced anything with that? The whole idea or notion, perhaps, that there are aliens that communicate with us, that impregnate some of us, that abduct some of us. Have you run into this in any of your work?
No. And yes and no. I'll tell you this. Have I ever, do I think I've ever been a contactee or an abductee? No, I don't. And that's perfectly okay with me.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm good with that, because although I'm not really scared of aliens, they kind of freak me out or wig me out a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I don't necessarily want to have a needle poked into my eye or to be poked and prodded by an alien or at this juncture of life by anybody. Let's just put it that way.
That's right. That's,
you know,
right.
I'm not interested in being poked, prodded, stuck in the eye, any of that happy hoopla. You know, and someone that we both know, and I don't like to mention names, but
sure,
someone said to me, you know, when you meet me, this is someone who said that he was an abductee and a contactee and an abductee. Sometimes when you meet me, you will have an experience yourself, a contact or an abduction experience. I'm like, hell no.
I guess hell we won't no. be meeting anytime soon.
Hell no. No. Uh-uh. No, I've dealt with demons and ghosts and stuff like that, and, you know, aliens. I watched that episode of Twilight Zone, which was To Serve Man, and I know there's probably some creature from some far-off, distant place that's coming down to Earth and going, you look tasty, Chip Coffee, you know, so I don't want to be served with, like, two vegetables and a biscuit, you know, no.
Oh, my. The delicatessen, Chip Coffee.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to turn into a meat and two with a bread, you know.
I have a question for you, Chip. I spoke to Scotty about this earlier today, or yesterday for me, I should say. Last week I was at the College of Psychic Studies in London, and it's a question that I put forward to the staff there as well, and a few of the attendees and so forth. And as a medium, I wanted to ask you directly and just get your opinion on this.
Okay.
Do you think, or why do you think, we haven't taken back the research, then I mean the serious research now, into spiritualism and mediumship? Whereas if we were to go back to, say, the Second World War, just afterwards, just towards the end, where we kind of handed over the research of the alternative field to the scientific community, for them to try and prove it to us in a kind of scientific, methodical kind of way. But we never really took it back. We just left it with them. And really, all they've done since is debunk this, debunk that. No, this isn't true. No, this isn't true. No, it can't work. No, that. And we've kind of sat on our laurels kind of thing, and we've gone okay with that. What's your take on that? I mean, because if
I look back and I think of all the great research that was taking place at the turn of the century and before the 19th century, even during the latter part of the 19th century, into the spirit, the movement of spiritualism and mediumship. And we've kind of lost it in that respect. It's gone too scientific, maybe.
I would agree with that. People ask me all the time, do you want to go in and have your abilities tested and things like that? I don't know. I've never been good at taking standardized tests. So in school, I didn't function and I wasn't a stupid kid. I was fairly above average. I've got a pretty decent and healthy IQ, but I just didn't standardize test well on most standardized tests. So I've been asked, do you want to go in and have your abilities tested? Have your abilities been tested in a scientific laboratory? Have you been a lab rat? And I never really have. Because here's the deal with me. I don't understand a lot of it. I look at the paranormal as you can't understand it, you can't explain it, but you can't deny that something's going on. Weird shit happens in the world around us all the time that we just can't find a plausible, rational, logical, scientific explanation for. I don't
Scotty says that every morning he gets up and looks in the mirror.
I do.
There's no rational explanation.
And for me, there's no rational explanation. I don't know how I do what I do. I don't consider myself 100% perfect. I could go into a laboratory and fail miserably, and the next day give a client information during a reading that there's cognizantly no way that with my five human senses I should be able to know. So how do you prove or disprove anything? I will tell people when I go on events or whatever that just because you get a meter to go off or a light to light up or a voice that comes through a recorder, what are you really proving? You are proving nothing.
Do you think that because of this, and it's like an intervention, this scientific intervention into it. Do you think that has anything to do with, if you were to look at mediumship, let's go back, say, 1,000 years, 2,000 years, we're talking about oracles, we're talking about seers, magicians. People would have gone to them for daily life questions.
Right.
And we've kind of lost that in our own civilization. Do you think that is the intervention of the scientific community within this field of expertise?
I think it's a little bit of that, but I think it's also evolution of people realizing that they themselves can connect with their own gut feelings and they themselves can do part of what they used to go to people for. It's just a changing and a shifting of the times to some degree also, I think. I don't want people coming to me, quite honestly, asking, should I do this? Should I do that? I don't want to have that sort of oracle or consulting control over somebody's life. What shirt should I wear today? I don't want psychic junkies coming to me. I don't. I don't foster that dependence on me as a psychic. As a matter of fact, that feels a little too codependent, weird to me. So I discourage that from my clients completely. I don't know. I guess I look at it as there's so much that we can't explain that goes on around us. Is science ever going to be able to explain that? Probably not in our lifetimes and maybe even many succeeding generations. I don't know. I look at these things that happen in the world around us and I go, they're inexplicable. And I doubt, quite honestly, they'll ever be fully scientifically explained. And when people say that the paranormal is a pseudoscience, I don't see that as a slam, because in reality, that's exactly what it is.
It's not a science at all. I know, and Chip, I've talked to you about this in the past, and you just mentioned it, this dependency issue that can come up. Because, as you know, I used to read Tarot a lot more than I do now. I do maybe two readings a year right now, but that's how I met you. I was doing readings at some of the events out there. And one thing, there was something you told me back then. You said, Scotty, you said, lose the cards because you can do this without it. And I said, I've never been comfortable with that. And you didn't mean that as any kind of a negative or anything like that. But you were saying, I think you've got the ability, because for me, the problem I had was I didn't know whether to trust what I was getting in my head or if I was just had an overactive imagination. So right. I liked the, if you will, the positive crutch of the cards. And I would say, look, I'm not delivering the message. I'm just facilitating a message being delivered. And then on top of that, though, I would run into people that would want to come to me week after week after week after week to get a reading. Right. And they would ask the same questions every time. And, you know, how has my love life looked this week? And what am I doing? And there was one point with one person in particular. I said, look, I'm not going to read for you for a while. I said, you're not taking any of the advice and you're not doing anything about it. You have the ability to make the change yourself. And you have to step into that and take the responsibility for that, not look lean on this as a dependent crutch. Now, do you run into that with some people where people want to continually? I mean, it's one thing when somebody says, hey, I'm going to offer you money to read for me again. And it's hard to turn down. But if you're really responsible about things, you say, hey, I'm not going to take your money on this because I can't do anything for you if you're not going to do it yourself.
It's a matter for me of ethics and professionalism.
Yes.
And therefore, you know, hey, I like money as well as the next guy. You know, there's the old saying, money is the root of all evil. Money's also the root of all wealth. You know, there's
that's
that
very true.
That reality of it. Money is the root of all wealth. And, you know, we all like to have a little extra cash in our pockets. But I'm an ethical, I consider myself, I should say, an ethical and a professional and a responsible person. Therefore, if someone is calling me and saying, I want to speak to my dead sister, you know, I'll do two readings for them only, two, and I won't do any more because I'm not going to be used as 1-800-DIAL-THE-DEAD. You know, I don't ever want to be that. Years ago, I worked, when I first started working professionally as a psychic and a medium, I worked for a hotline, a psychic hotline. And, you know, as many fledgling psychics and mediums have done, you know, I worked on a telephone service. And you paid on a per-minute rate, and people would call me, and they would call me repeatedly for the, just like you said, for the same things.
Right.
And finally, I had to just say, I don't have anything more I can tell you, and I'll still do that with clients. My booking assistant, Rebecca, will tell them, Chip doesn't have any new information for you. I don't want to foster that level of dependence. And one story I'll tell you is this, Scotty, and this will kind of probably take your breath away. There was a lady who called me on the psychic hotline years ago once, at one point in time, because she couldn't reach the normal guy that she talked to.
Oh.
And she confessed to me, I saw his feedback and his ratings, and this woman would call him numerous times every day at $3.99 or $4.99 a minute. This woman confessed to me when she couldn't reach him that she needed an answer to this question, and then said she couldn't reach this other psychic and that she had maxed out all of her credit cards and filed bankruptcy and had spent to the tune of several $100,000.
Holy crap.
On psychic readings. And when I mentioned this to the other psychic, he said something that, you know, I understood, but I still couldn't abide by. I couldn't condone. And that is, he said, well, Chip, if she wasn't calling me, she would be calling somebody else. And he fully admitted to me that this woman, the cash that he had gotten from this woman, the money he had collected, had purchased his condo in Florida and a new BMW.
Oh, man. I'm in the wrong line of work.
So, you know, I guess there's two sides to everything, but my own ethics won't allow me, and you hear my dog barking in the background.
I do.
My ethics won't allow me to be that guy. I just can't.
And
I won't.
I think that that is what makes you who you are. And by the way, on that point and on the point of the dog barking, I want to talk to you a little bit about something else that makes up who Chip Coffee is, and that is your advocacy for animals.
It's very important. As a matter of fact, I went to a fundraising event for Angels Among Us, which is an organization here in the Atlanta area where I live that is very special to me. They save many, 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 many lives. I think thousands of lives since they came into existence, and I support their efforts 1,000%. Every life saved is a blessing, and, you know, millions of animals die in animal shelters every year, and I did have four dogs I lost one of my dogs a little over a month ago. And
I remember.
And it was heartbreaking, and my heart still hurts, and my soul still hurts. But one of the lovely things that Angels did for me because of my support was they – and I'm going to cry here, Scotty. Damn you, Oprah. you're pulling an Oprah on me. But one of the things that that Angels did for me was they rescued a female dog and named her after my Molly.
Oh.
And that was a precious thing and a lovely tribute both to my – lovely girl that I lost, and to me. But I've got three other girls, happier topics. I've got three other girls here at home, and, you know, they're the loves of my life. So at some point in time, I'm sure there'll be another one that will come and join the pack, but not yet.
Can I keep you in that frame of mind, Chip? And I want to get a bit serious. I want to get a bit serious here. Sorry for everybody else who's going to be listening to this. John's diatribe. As a medium... and as a gifted human who can converse with the other side, and you obviously have an overwhelming feeling, not only for the animal kingdom, but also for your fellow man and so forth and so forth and so forth. How do you view then, or how do you... do you ever get messages from the other side that come through from the other side of mankind? And what I mean is, and I hate to do this, but take the atrocity that happened this morning with the 21 Egyptians that were beheaded on the beach of Libya. How do you deal with something like that?
Honestly, John, I don't get a lot of that because, again, I'm not that guy. I ask my spirit partners to sort of filter all that stuff out for me. I kind of see them as sentinels or watchers or guard dogs. And no offense meant by that, guys, over in spirit. But that's the way I view them. They kind of watch over me and don't allow me, thankfully, blessedly, to be assaulted by that sort of stuff. I've had angry spirits come through. I've dealt with demonic, what I consider demonic entities. But... you know, even in that space, in that particular time, as strange as this may sound, I've still felt protected. I've still felt guarded, and I've still felt like I had sort of a force field around me of that positive energy coming from spirit that's saying, you know, you'll get so close, but if you start to really F with Chip too much, we've got his back, we've got his front, we've got his side, so... you're not going to really get too. You're not going to make too great an inroad at getting toward our guy, Chip.
Hmm. Let's talk about that a little bit more when we come back, folks. We're talking to Chip Coffee here on the Intrepid Radio program, and we will be back after these top of the hour breaks. Hang on.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be bridging the gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields. From ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel Mall of America in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
Hey, the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle. Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills. And to ensure proper placement, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, and eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger, as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available, and they are already starting to book up. So go to exodusreality.com and get your place reserved today. That's exodusreality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
Hello, my name is Patrick Sullivan. I'm a boxer and a Guinness drinker. Now, it's come to my attention that you lads in America only drink Guinness on special occasions. So let me tell you about that special occasion that finds me drinking a pint of Guinness. I was fighting Michael the Hammer Halleck when the referee stopped the fight in the fourth round due to excessive bleeding. As the referee led poor Hammer, covered in blood, to his corner, all I could think about was I was going to win for the first time in 57 professional fights. However, the referee soon made the discovery that it was my blood covering old Hammer. And what can I say? I'm a bleeder by nature. Now, you might be thinking, oh, in 57's not much of a special occasion. And that's my point exactly. You can drink Guinness any day. Sure, it's dark, but it drinks smooth and easy. You may even find it refreshes your spirit. So don't be so precious with your pints. Grab a Guinness, because it's good to drink.
Guinness Stout, imported by Guinness Fast Import Company, Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, and if you think the Irish only bleed Kelly Green, just come to one of my fights.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to ScottAllenRoberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, ALANROBERTS.com, to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
Live in simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban Mountains of Luxor, Egypt, Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
Well, we were just musing over something about John, and then it comes in and says, Dr. John Ward and intelligent talk, all in the same sentence.
So, John, forgive me, John. I do know you are an intelligent man. But, yes, folks, during the break, we sometimes talk about things that you would love to hear. But John has admittedly said he's probably going to turn into an old pensioner someday who will hit people with his umbrella.
I've already done that, John, so welcome to the club.
Thank you, Chip. Thank you.
There you go.
Your membership card is in the mail.
Excellent. Excellent. Can I
Fantastic.
Go past them, please?
You know what I'm getting, Chip, every day? I'm 54 years old, and for the last 2 years, I got to tell you, AARP has to have the most money in the world. I think at least once a week I get a full packet from them with cards in it telling me all you have to do is, you know, call this number and, you know, put your money in and we'll get you going. But I get an advertisement for the last 2 years, I swear, on a weekly basis. So they've got
Scotty, just break down and send them $18 or whatever it is and just join, for Christ's sake. Just get with the frickin' program. I've been an AARP member since I was 50 years old. I thought, you know, just embrace my farthood.
Embrace it. Embrace it, your farthood.
Just embrace my old farthood. And I, you know what? I'm 60 years old. 60 is the number. 60 and a half.
Holy
I feel
cow.
Like I'm 5 and a half. I'm 60 and a half years old in a few days. You know what? It is what it is. It's a number. As long as I'm doing all right, my grandmother used to say, they'd say, how are you feeling? She'd go, I'm still able to sit up and take some nourishment. So that's kind of the way I feel. As long as I'm able to sit up and take some nourishment like my grandma did, I'm in good shape.
My wife, you know, Rainey, she's 20 years younger than I am, and she just said to me the other day, she said, man, you're 54? She says, wow. She said, in about a half a year, she says, we'll be able to get the senior discount at the restaurant. She says, I cannot wait for your birthday.
Well, and go on AARP. You look at all the discounts you get on AARP. Send them that $18, you cheap ass.
I'll see if I can break down.
I'll put a 20 in the mail to you. I'll go on and register your ass.
See, your humanitarianism is coming through.
Yeah, just do it. You know, honestly, you know, as far as AARP goes, and I'm not like a spokesperson for them or anything, but I'll tell you this. I saved in the first two hotel stays that I did, I saved my membership fee on just two hotel stays for AARP.
Wow, really?
With the discount. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's worth $18.
Yeah, I don't even know what the membership is. You know, my cousin Kenny, who lives here with me, we've got kind of a family sort of a deal going with AARP, so, you know, we both, when we go to hotels, you know, maybe only save a few bucks on a hotel, but after a while, those few bucks add up.
Yeah, I guess.
You could do that with Rainey, Scotty, but you'd have to wait another 20 years.
Yeah, I could, yeah. I'll be 74 years old by then. And that's about the time my last child will be graduating from high school, so the way it goes. So Chip, we were talking a little bit before the break, and there's something that you mentioned that I wanted to get back into, and that is this whole idea, and I've mocked this and made fun of it, and some of it, I think, comes from the struggles of faith that I have had, and John knows all about this about me, and so do our listeners, is that it seemed that when I struggled with my faith issues with God, and I really pushed it all out, and I became, I would call myself a very committed agnostic right now. Or a practical agnostic. But then I hear you say things about hailing to spirit and the protection that comes from spirit and the spirits and so on. That takes a lot of faith to do that, to say that. And even if the object of your faith, it might be a little different than, say, your traditional Catholic or something like that.
Sure.
So I tend to, because of that question of faith, I put that question out. And it's like my skeptical side really wants to kick in when I hear anybody out there that says to me, oh, spirit said this to me, or I'm a psychic because Gabriel appears in my closet every Tuesday night. And, you know, and I'm like, bullshit. That's the first thing that comes to my mind is why is there are there all these people out there that will say to me, well, I feel that spirit is saying this. And I start to mock that because I don't want to feel something as much as I want to know something, because I want the feelings to come on the being predicated by fact, by something that I can solidify. How do you cope with that, or is it just as easy as saying I have faith?
First of all, I don't give a rat's ass what anybody else believes. It's not my deal.
You know, well, amen.
No one should tell us or You guys were talking about radical Islam or ISIS or ISIL or the Westboro Baptist Church or people in the Crusades, whatever in the hell you're talking about. You should not allow anyone or force anyone to believe what you believe. I'm not here to convince or convert. I don't care what other people believe. Conversely, people shouldn't mind their own friggin' business and not care what I believe. So that's the deal. Yes, I'm a man of faith. I'm not a man that's strong on religion. I think religion is too indoctrinating and controlling and big business in a lot of instances. So I'm a faithful man, not necessarily a religious man, although I do still identify as Roman Catholic. In practice, but not in theory, but not in practice. Let's put it that way.
Title, yes.
Yeah, it's how I was raised. That being said, you know, I'm not one of these guys that lives my life in the ethers. You know, Gabriel doesn't come and hang out in my closet. You know, come on out of the closet, Gabriel. Some others of us have. You can do it too.
Lynn in the chat room said Gabriel is not that subtle.
Well, Gabriel needs to come out of the closet because girlfriend put on a tiara and burst on out. But the deal is this.
Love it.
Surely I digress. But the deal is, I'm not one of those. If I work with spirit partners or whatever, you know, that's what I believe, and that's fine. If you believe it, that's fine and dandy. If you don't, I don't care. But I'm one of those practical, pragmatic kind of guys that, you know, I'm not always talking about airy-fairy, woo-woo, you know, head in the clouds sort of stuff all the time. I'm known as being a kind of a tell-it-like-it-is kind of a guy. You say you like to see things with your own eyes, hear things with your own ears or whatever.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Here's an example. Let me give you this quick example, and I think John, of course, probably has not heard this, but my mom passed away, I guess it's 18 or so years ago now, and I begged the universe, God, whomever, to give me an immutable sign, something that I couldn't ignore from my mother. And I'm out cutting my grass one day on my kick-ass lawn tractor, and I turn into the side yard, and there stands my mother. And being the healthy skeptic that I am, can I drop the F-bomb on your show?
You do whatever you feel like.
Fine, I'm going to drop the F-bomb subtly, because I'm Irish and Catholic and all that stuff. So I go around the corner, and being the healthy skeptic that I am, I see my mother standing there. And my first thought is, oh, fuck, I've had a stroke. I'm not believing in that instant that I'm seeing this full body, full-blown apparition of my mom standing in the side yard. My first thought is, oh, God, I've had a stroke. And when I ran through all the things, like I can curl my tongue, I can't say a complete sentence, I can do this, I can do that, and realized I hadn't had a stroke and I was not overly heated, I thought, what other explanation other than I'm hallucinating except I'm seeing my mom? So I don't buy everything hook, line, and sinker either.
Sure, sure.
I am only as good as the information that I can provide to my clients. That's all I can do. If it turns out that there's some level of accuracy, and I'm not 100% accurate, no one is, that's above my pay grade. So I'm not 100% accurate, but if I can give you things that you can relate to that are accurate, then I've done my job.
Well, that sounds good.
That was a good dose of realism there. I like that, Chip.
Now, this is something that's rare, by the way, with psychics, as far as my experience goes, is they seem to be short on the practical, pragmatic, nuts and bolts, no bullshit approach to things.
I may be the exception rather than the rule, but that's how I lead my life.
And that's something that I've noticed about you as well. Whenever I have conversations with you, you don't lapse into that very easily.
Very noble attribute.
Thank you. It is.
Explain what this whole thing is then about the spirit connectedness, the spirits that you work with, and so on. Are for you, are they always the same spirits? Are they different spirits? Is there somebody you're connected with? And how do you, Chip Coffee, how do you know this?
I don't know how I know. It's faith. Faith is belief in things that you really can't scientifically prove. It's a belief in things unseen. That's the the fairly general definition of fate. I believe fully that we
said.
I believe that we all have spirit guides. I believe that they are formerly living beings that exist in a different dimension or realm who have learned their lessons, I think that we all come here to learn a variety of different things, to experience and learn a variety of different things. And that it's kind of like a merit badge when you're in the Scouts. You've gotten your merit badge on this. You've learned to be patient. You've learned to be this. You've learned to be that. And they've learned those lessons. So they, for whomever the great we is in the sky or in the other realm or wherever, has entrusted them to be kind of mentors or guides or teachers or whatever word you want to use. Spirit guide has become the catchphrase. So I believe that they, in some capacity, work with us to help us live consciously, to help us to earn our own merit badges. And do I believe that most of the ones that have worked with me during my lifetime have remained the same? Yes. Do I believe that they can shift in and out depending on what our needs and lessons that we need to learn are here on this place we call planet Earth? Yes. Spirit guides also are very different than angels. Grandma's not going to die and become an angel. You know, angels are, in my opinion, are emissaries of God, that God created them just for the standpoint of being able to do his work and his bidding. So
right.
Grandma's not going to die and become an angel. Grandma's not going to get her wings. Grandma's not your guardian angel. You know, guardian angels are a separate thing. Guides have spent a lifetime or two or three or a thousand here on the earth, and they're elevated souls who have been entrusted to do something to help mankind.
I ran into, and I told you some of this story in private a long time ago, but when I was in Egypt, there was a connection, really cutting through a very long story, making it very brief for the sake of this question. An ancient person in Egypt said that they were connected to me. And this was through a good friend of ours, Chris Conway. He's a Scottish medium. And he was there, and he said he got this. And there were several different things he brought up that verified all this information in different ways. And he had said that he was connected to me because he thinks like I think, but that he would never leave Egypt. But whenever I came to Egypt, he would be there. And several things happened, to qualify this connection. Now, John and I and Rocky, we went out to a place where Rocky had kind of told us ahead of time it could be very active place. And so I sat in the quiet in the car while we were driving and called on this person. I said, I know you said that you would never leave Egypt, but I'm going to ask you if you have the ability, can I connect with you now mentally, spiritually, would you put a protection over us, over me? And I actually felt something, and I want to say I'm not so needy in these areas that I can make stupid shit up because I need to in my mind. It wasn't a psychological trick, and I felt like almost like a cowled hood put over me, over my shoulders and my head, and I felt it in the forehead and so on, and I described it to the guys when it happened. Now, that to me, I have a belief with a narrow margin of doubt because I don't know, I can't prove it, but I have a belief that that person was there and that that was the person I was connecting with, and it was a very positive, protective type of a thing that was put over me. Now, there's not really a question in this as much as I want you to comment on connecting with spirit guides. How do you know the biblical verse that says try the spirits to see if they're of God? That's in a very Christian sense.
Sure.
How would you say to people, because people could take that, just that little story I told, and said, oh, I'm going to try that, and they could invoke something they ought not invoke. How would you recommend to people, or how do you do it? Let's personalize that. How do you connect? How do you see this kind of connectivity? I know John's got a big opinion on all of this stuff as well. How do you connect with that and know that you're connecting with the right thing?
I have a very strong faith-based belief system. I believe in good. I try to practice good. To give you a story, that I've shared with some of my clients, and I may have shared it with you, so I apologize if this is a replay.
You just go.
But many years ago, in a moment of quiet reflection, because I cannot slow my brain down to classically meditate, and I'm 60 years old. If I've ever gotten to a lotus position, I'd never get out of it.
That's funny. Anyhow, John and I just had that conversation yesterday. Go ahead.
So in a moment of quiet reflection, I asked my spirit partners, my spirit guides, what is the meaning of life? And they laughed at me, and it pissed me off. I thought it was a valid question. And they said, Chip, the meaning of life is very simple. Get through it the best way you can. And I thought that was such a glib and pat answer. It was
glib.
It was so simplistic. And I said, you're going to have to give me more. You're going to have to explain, extrapolate, expand on that. And they said, you who are in the human form tend to complicate everything when things typically are much more simple than you think they are. They said, let us make this simple for you. We, the great we, God, the universe, spirit, angels, guides, whatever, ask only two, count them, two things from you who are in the human form. Those two things are, do no intentional harm to yourself or to others. And number two, get happy. And even then, in its simplicity, I went, yeah. And they went, just think about it. Just think about it. And as I continued to ponder and cogitate on do no intentional harm to yourself or to others and get happy, those two simplistic dictates became enormous.
And that sounds so overly simplistic.
But think about it for a while and it will become bigger. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt anybody else. But find what makes you happy and go for it.
Well, isn't
really,
that like
that sort of encompasses the do unto others rule, the Ten Commandments. It really, think about it. It encompasses, it so simplifies a lot of other stuff that gets much more wordy.
Well, do you think that we just tend to then in life, we overcomplicate things and it really does boil down to the simplest common denominator?
I look at my life and I'll say yes. Look at your life. What do you say?
Yeah, it has to be the simplest thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing I'm a simple man.
Well,
we know that.
I've been called simple-minded, but, you know.
So what do you think the future of mediumship is in spiritualism in the next, say, 50 years or so?
Couldn't even begin to guess.
Do you think it's going to grow?
I think it will probably grow. I think that there's a lot of people out there, you know, that are now interested in seeing if they can make their own connections with something that's outside the realm of the norm. I see a lot of people out there now saying, oh, I'm a psychic, I'm a medium. And I think everybody's psychic. I think everybody gets little intuitive moments, and some people get them often. But, you know, I don't know. People, you know, I hear, oh, the veil is thinning and la, la, la. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that. I'm smart on certain things, and maybe I'm not supposed to be that smart on things. Maybe none of us are. But, you know, I would hope that people would, if nothing else, try to lead a decent, kind, compassionate, caring life. And if that's all part of being a psychic and medium and walking the good path, doing the good things, then I would hope for that. I don't know if it will happen, but I would certainly hope that it would.
Well, that's
go on, Scotty.
I was just going to say that's the big thing that I ask, and I think you kind of hit on your take on the answer on that, which is I really don't know, but here's where I hope it's going, is that we see. I want us to be able to separate the ability from the movement. Because there are definitely movements out there that we've seen. Think of, you know, of course, the spiritualist movement in the late 19th, early 20th century. Look at, you know, the Great Awakening, the revivals. Look at, for psychic mediumship, that has exponentially exploded with the advent of all the pop culture of ghost hunting and things like that.
Absolutely.
And so it's become more in vogue again, and only it's taken a different twist.
And,
it all boils down to individualism.
Yes.
And in that little quandary is a problem in itself, because as Chip has already said himself and confessed to us, you know, he's a very God-fearing man. You have problems with your faith, Scotty. My faith has went a long time ago, and that's as far away from me as possible. I wish I could get it back, and we've had this conversation so many times.
Sure.
But I just can't even begin to grasp a faith. I'm sorry. Especially with what I'm seeing happening around us today. I just cannot grasp a faith. And for me, I look at individualism and the way in which we practice our own faiths and our own religions, and I do question it sometimes if we got it right, and whether we should revert back to the old state religion of the ancient Egyptians and so forth, and the Sumerians.
Well, I don't know if we'd want to do that, but certainly something I see in Chip and saw in your answer was that ability to remove the individual from the movement. And that the movement is one thing, individual practice, individual belief, individual faith is something very different. And so let's do this. Chip, if you can hang on with us into the next segment for a little bit, we'll keep you as long as you're comfortable sticking around. And we've got another half an hour segment after this, and we'll see how far we can go and keep Chip before we put you to sleep. So, folks, you're listening to Chip Coffee. You're listening to me, Scotty Robertson, my cohort, Dr. John Ward. And we will be back here on the Intrepid Radio program after these messages. Hang on.
Intrepid Radio is a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Just ask Dr. Ward. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger, as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available, and they are already starting to book up. So go to exodusreality.com and get your place reserved today. That's exodusreality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
Imagine a place, beautiful, green, sloping mountains, and a rich, mysterious window into our ancient past. It's a culture the likes of which you won't find anyplace else. And while the place I'm describing is in Vermont, it's also the home of Inner Traditions, publishers of fine books on mind, body, and spirit for more than three decades. Inner Traditions are internationally recognized publishers of everything from occult to esoteric and spiritual books, as well as the leading authorities on alternative health, holistic healing, sacred sexuality, altered states of consciousness, and so much more. And frankly, it's not the kind of information you'll find just anywhere. Exploring the inner secrets of humanity requires thinking outside the box. And when it comes to Inner Traditions, the name says it all. All you have to do to learn more is visit innertraditions.com, and you can receive a free catalog that will tell you all about their latest books and newest authors. That's Inner Traditions and Bear and Company, publishers of fine esoteric books for more than three decades. Find them online at innertraditions.com.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomenon, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
For the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills. And to ensure proper placement, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, and eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
Are you ready for some rollicking adventure? In Scotty Roberts' book, The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare, join Irish Rabbit, Tam O'Hare, and his young squirrel squire, Horatio McNutt, as they journey through Scotland of the mid-1500s seeking a small child who's been stolen by the fairy folk. Crafty raccoon pirates, conniving noble wolves, conflicted royal foxes, and self-serving religious badgers all stand in the way as their quest brings them headlong into high seas action and supernatural intrigue. The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare is in bookstores everywhere and at barnesandnoble.com. This hardcover, lushly illustrated chapter book is the first book in the Tam O'Hare series, so swash your buckle and prepare yourself for a historically rollicking, swaggeringly supernatural adventure. Visit tamohare.com to learn more. You'll never trust a raccoon with a sword again.
Sticking their fingers in the hole of the dike of humanity, Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward.
And we're back.
All right. Yeah, what John said. We're back. And it's another glorious in from break from the very underspoken Dr. John Ward.
I just like to, you know, impart a bit of Britishness into the show.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I know.
During the break, he did call me a colonial, so I'm wearing that badge of honor right now.
That was fantastic. Oh, you're so colonial.
I pulled out my fife and drum.
Wait till he starts getting on you for your grammar and things like that.
Oh. And just so we know, just so your audience knows, fife and drum is not a euphemism for anything. When I say I pulled out my fife and drum is not a euphemism for anything else. So don't get your mind in a gutter there, guys.
Wow.
Before Scotty rips into some totally new stream of thought here, Chip, can you just continue where you were going when we were in the break there, where you talked about the spiritualism within England compared to the States?
You know, I was saying that I think that a lot of people in the UK, particularly in England, I mean, you've got huge spiritualist colonies there, and we've got a few of them here in the U.S., but I don't think that the United States is quite caught up with the whole spiritualist idea of spirituality and the study of spiritualism like folks have in the U.K. And, you know, I have a friend who was going to come and study spiritualism, who was thinking about coming and studying spiritualism in the U.K. at Alfred Alfred Finlay. That's the name, right? Alfred Finlay? Mm,
yeah, the Finlay College, yes.
She was going to come and study there. She had been interested in coming and taking some courses there. And, you know, it's very interesting the way that the Brits view things. And, you know, I am almost ashamed to say that I've never been to the UK. So gasp. It's on my bucket list. So at some point in time, I want to come and savor things. You know, I want to go back to France and go to some places in France as well. But I also want to go to the UK and see some of the things in the UK, not the least of which is Stonehenge, and just soak up a little bit of the UK culture at some point in life before I get too old to walk.
Chip, you have my an invitation personally by me to visit the UK, and we will go and have tea, high tea, with cucumber sandwiches with Her Majesty the Queen on the lawns of Buckingham Palace.
Count me in.
There you go. I would never offer that to Scotty because he's so uncouth and he wouldn't know how to dress.
Bourgeois.
Oh, yes. It's me, totally. I am bourgeois all the way. And, John, so you're in with the Queen now. You're in with Liz, huh?
You cannot mention her in that derogatory way. She is Her Majesty the Queen.
So let me tell you a true story. You want to hear a true story about Queen Elizabeth?
I do.
Here's a true story about Queen Elizabeth. Let's make this funny for a minute. This is supposedly a true story. I'm hoping it's not an urban legend or an old wives' tale, but supposedly she was on a receiving line. And there was this guy there, and she walks up to him, and she goes, "Lovely to meet you. What do you do for a living?" And he said, "Oh, Your Majesty, I'm a photographer." She says, "Oh, isn't that funny? My brother-in-law is a photographer." And he says, "Well, that is quite a coincidence, because my brother-in-law is a queen."
Very nice.
So, yeah, there you have it.
There you have it. A little
royal humor, if you will.
Oh, yes. John doesn't take to royal humor well, so you got him laughing on that one. That's a good point.
Well, that's kind of a cute story, though. It's not a coincidence. My brother-in-law is a queen.
That's very nice.
What do you think is the fundamental difference, though, then, Chip, between British spiritualism, then, and American spiritualism?
Ooh, that's a really good question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to it. I think it's that which might be defined as dedication. I think that you have a lot of dilettantes. That was a good word, wasn't it? I think you have a lot of dilettantes here in the U.S., whereas you have a lot of people that are much more committed to the study of spirituality and spiritualism in the U.K.
Would I dare throw in commercialism in there?
I would, as someone who is part of that commercialism, I would have to say absolutely. But then again, you've got a lot of very popular television shows and radio shows and things like that in the UK. So, you know, potato, potato. I don't know for sure because, like I said, I've never visited the UK. So, you know, maybe not. But I do know that it's become – people have become overly fascinated with ghost hunting and spirituality in the U.S. in the past decade. And I think it's – you know, I've seen some delightful shows on spirituality and ghost-related paranormal-type topics, and then I've seen some really abysmal attempts at doing television here in the U.S., and it's I don't even want to go any further than that. It's kind of like a mixed bag. Let's just put it that way.
And I think that's the beauty of it, though, that it is a mixed bag. I think if it was all the same, it would be bloody boring.
Well, I think mixed bag – I would more say it's saturated. It's an oversaturated market, and that second word, market, is what I think a lot of it has become. There are people who will do things because it is a place to market abilities or to market their particular group, or it's a marketing thing, and it's a thing to say. For some people, I think there's a genuine, I did this. And we're doing this, and it's exciting. And for others, there's that need to be in a spotlight.
Well, and for me, it's like as someone who's done several television shows and honestly would like to do more. But the deal is, I see too many people in the paranormal arena that if you dangle a carrot in front of their nose and say, I want you to do this television show. And, you know, it's about the one that I heard about recently is like paranormal investigators investigating in the nude. Or, you know, some show that is totally dumbed, completely dumbed down and doesn't have any, you know, any redeeming qualities, so to speak. There are people that will jump on that if they get that offer to do so and will do it for no money or a few hundred dollars an episode or whatever. And I think that we've just lost a lot of the integrity that might have once been possible to achieve within the media for spirituality and the paranormal arena here in the U.S. because it's oversaturated with not great television. The not great shows completely overshadow the ones that have benefit and merit.
But does that not, everything you just say, doesn't that all of that pertain to the very first question which I posed, and that is that due to the fact that we handed over the scientific research, we handed mediumship, spiritualism, paranormal, ghost hunting, call it what you want. We handed it all over to the scientific community and said, look here, guys, make head or tail of this and come back and tell us if it's true using all your new apparatus and so forth. And we kind of sat on our laurels. And because we got bored waiting, and then they came back and said, well, we can't verify anything. As Scotty just rightly said, it's then saturated the market with this proliferation of media that's exploited it. And a good word that you use there, Chip, I love that word, integrity. You know, it's something I asked back at the college last week, and I said, you know, where are the masters? Where are they these days? Who do we have to turn to? Who can we turn to ask questions? And it's something that does worry me, actually, for the future generations, I must admit.
Well, and I look at it like this. I agree with everything you said, John, and I think it is, who do we turn to when we need to have good, sound advice? And I don't know the answer to that. You know, I've done a lot of talks, and I've done a lot of speaking to people, and I know that some of my friends have made a career of going on the lecture tours and speaking at events. So maybe those are the people that are looked to for certain answers or whatever. But one of the things that I will never do is try to fabricate an answer if I don't have one. One of my answers is, I don't know. I can tell you what I've experienced, what I've read, what I've heard, whatever. But in many instances, there are so many answers that I don't know. So, and the whole exploitation of and total explosion in the media of paranormal topics here in the U.S., it's sort of mind-boggling.
Mm.
Chip, other than the looking in the mirror and saying, I see myself aging or whatever, we've already joked around about that tonight. When you look in that, if you will, that esoteric mirror and you see Chip Coffey, do you view yourself as a hierophant type, the interpreter of sacred mystery,
good word, Scotty.
Why, thank you. The looking at esoteric principles behind all of this, or I know you said that you consider yourself kind of the nuts and bolts of things. How do you see, when you're in your quiet moments, and maybe these are things you don't want to reveal, but if you want to talk about this, and you think, I'm giving something back to humanity, and that is, what does that look like to Chip Coffey when you see yourself and you do that deep introspection that you're willing to share with us here tonight? What do you see yourself as being? How do you see what you're doing?
Years ago, when I was in Canada, some of the folks that produced my Coffee Talk with Chip Coffey tour are Canadian, and I was in Edmonton, Alberta at one point in time and had the good fortune to sit in a day-long meeting with a gentleman who had formerly been the head of marketing for Nike in Asia, and he had formulated his own country that was a branding and marketing company. And when I was looking at branding and marketing myself as a psychic and a medium, we took this day-long meeting, and one of the questions he asked us was, and this is a very difficult question, in one word, sum up your mission, sum up what you want to do, sum up yourself. And although we could not come up with two words for what we wanted Chip Coffee to be known for, we came up with two words, which he was happy with. Those two words for my goal is to provide some level of comfort and healing to the people that I touch. However I do that, whether it's my humor, my words, my actions, whatever that is, comfort and healing were the two things that I wanted to provide to people. What do I see when I look in a mirror? In that metaphorical mirror, I see a guy that's, you know, a Southern gay Catholic psychic and medium. You know, try to wrap your brain around that for a minute. So
that's almost paradoxical.
It's a mixed bag of mixed metaphors. But I like that, mixed bag of mixed metaphors. That's kind of interesting. I'll use that again.
That's good.
But the interesting part about it is, you know, I'm just like everybody else. I'm not rich. I'm not Oprah rich. I don't want to be Oprah rich. I live a comfortable lifestyle. I have enough money to pay my bills and then a little extra. And that's all I ever really ask for. So I'm not filthy bloody rich. I drive a Kia Soul. I live in a modest home. You know, I shop at Walmart and Costco. I, you know, unload my own dishwasher, cut my own grass, you know, do my own laundry. So I'm just like everybody else. And that's kind of the way that I want to be viewed by everybody else. I'm just this average, everyday kind of guy who some people think I can do something that is interesting or valuable or even extraordinary. And honestly, I take my work seriously, but Scotty, John, I don't take myself too seriously.
I can't believe you load and unload your own dishwasher. I have a man that does that.
John has an Egyptian man.
I want a man that does that, and I don't mean in any other way other than I want somebody. You know, if anybody was going to come into my life as far as romantic, they better be a handyman, a doctor, a masseuse, love to do housework and laundry and blah, blah, you know. I don't think I'm looking for a partner anymore. I think I'm looking for maybe a slave. I don't know.
What was Red Green's line? Remember Red Green? Remember, if they don't find you handsome, they better find you handy.
I like that.
But Chip, where can people find you? Where can people get in touch with you, see more about you, and find your calendar, see where you're going to be, things like that?
The easiest launching pad for that is just my website at chipcoffee.com, chipcoffey.com. It'll give you a little information about who I am. If you go to the events page, you can go to the events page and find out where I'm going to be around the country doing various events. And also click on the private readings page and learn about how you can get a phone reading with me. I do all my private readings by telephone from my home here in Atlanta.
All right. Excellent. Well, Chip, this has been a true pleasure. Again, it's so comfortable being around you. I've got to tell this one little story before we let you go. I've been to your home, and you and I drove with a couple of other people from your home in Atlanta down to, I don't even remember where. We were in the car.
Birmingham.
And this was the first time you and I had met. And when we're driving down, you looked at me and you asked me, do you like John Denver?
I remember that.
And I said, I do. And so we were listening to John Denver music, and a song came up. You said, my favorite song of John Denver's is Take Me Home, Country Roads.
And we sang our little hearts out.
And we were singing that song together in that car. and there were even tears in eyes because we were talking about the deeper stuff that was supposed to be meant behind the song and so on. And so that was a very good memory. The first time I met you, I was stuck in a car with you for about 5 hours.
The other song is, Ain't It Good to Be Back Home Again.
That's the one I'm talking about. Not Take Me Home, Country Roads. It was
Ain't It Good to Be Back Home Again. I think that's probably, I'm giving the wrong name of the song, but that's the lyric of the song. And, you know, that's the song that's always one of those tear-jerking songs for me. And now I'll go on YouTube and listen to it in your honor before I go to bed.
Oh, fantastic. And I'll do the same.
Chip, it's been wonderful having you here tonight. Thanks for coming
on. It's always good to spend time with you, Scotty. John, even though we have not had the chance to meet in person, I'm honored to be in your presence, and I'm doing the bow to you at this point in time. And hopefully we will get a chance to hang out and spend time face-to-face at some point in time, my friend.
We will do indeed, Chip. We will do indeed. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. I apologize for Scotty and his profanity.
Yeah, there is that, but yeah.
Yeah. he's not really eloquent in his old age, but we keep him around. We keep him around.
Well, much love to both of you. Thank you for inviting me to come on your show, and we will do this again, I hope.
We will. Do indeed. Love you, Chip.
Thank you, Chip.
Thanks for being
here. Take care.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, folks, that was, as you know, that was Chip Coffee. What a delightful man he is. And you can
breath of fresh air.
He really is. This is what I said when I was introducing him. This is what I always liked about Chip, is there is no pretense to the man. And I see lots of criticism of him out there and things like that from all your skeptical and types and all of that stuff. But what I find about Chip first is genuineness. I'm thinking of the opposite of disingenuous. He's ingenuous. He's genuous. Like you said, a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, that's what I liked about him, actually. It was all genuine all the way. He didn't try to hide, and he didn't try to flower. He didn't try to hype it. He just told it as it is. And if you didn't like the answer, well, tough cookie.
That's right. That's right. And there you go. Hey, and speaking of going, before you and I go,
yes, darling.
Let's just talk a little bit about our little Ireland trip that's coming up.
Oh, happy jabers. We'd be going back to the little island, the little place with the little people.
Why, that was almost good.
Of course it was good. You see, being Welsh, you see, we can put on the Irish accent, you know. But, hey. Happy jabers. We're going over the little bit of an island over there. A little leprechauns running around. Little Barry Fitzgeralds running around.
I think I encountered that little James Swagger fellow. Oh, yes, he offered me a pint one day, and I took it.
That was actually very good. You didn't actually sound like Scotty at all. Usually it always comes out as Mrs. Doubtfire, but that actually was quite good.
John, oh dear.
No,
oh dear, you're dribbling again.
Yeah, but just for the audience, that was a surreal experience. There I was with Maria, Freya, and my mother-in-law, Renee, outside the British Museum. We'd just been in to say hello to a few people, and we wanted to show Freya the Egyptian exhibits. And we were leaving. We were 5 minutes late for our taxi to take us to Heathrow. And we came out the front gates, and who's there? James Swagger. I mean, you know, what the synchronicity.
I know, what a crazy world is that?
I mean, there's James Wagon, the whole of central London. He's there just outside the British Museum.
And he lives outside of Belfast. And
yeah.
We're putting this tour together, folks, this Irish tour that we're doing with History Trippers, Greyland Report, Barry Fitzgerald, James Swagger, Micah Hanks, John and me, up in June. And here's John visiting London from Egypt via Sweden. And he bumps into James Swagger on the street. And James just happened to be in London. They were both going to the same place. That was like when we bumped into John Anthony West coming out of a temple in a godforsaken Sahara Desert, Daryl Medina. So, yeah.
Do you know what I'm looking forward to?
What are you looking forward to, John?
Is having to a few Guinnesses at the end of the evening. And taking you and Micah by the hand with me and Barry and James and going cow-tipping.
Cow-tipping. You've been in Egypt far, far too long, my friend.
have you never been cow-tipping?
Oh, do they still cow-tip back in Hereford?
You obviously have not been cow-tipping.
And then you'll get a couple of pints of Guinness in you. You'll start talking Welsh.
And, I probably will, actually.
We
could make a few crop circles.
I remember, and I may have told this story on air before, but when Barry Fitzgerald and you were both staying here at my house back in October before the Paradigm Symposium, Barry went to the liquor store and bought a bottle of
Glenfiddich, wasn't it? Was it Glenfiddich?
No, he didn't get Glenfiddich. What did he get? I don't remember which scotch he bought. No, Jameson. Jameson, Irish whiskey. And he came back with a Jameson, and he said, I'm going to make you boys something that we drink back home. And it was Jameson mixed with, I think, I want to say either soda water or 7-Up. But it was sweet. And he brought out for you a little, about 3-inch tall snifter. And then for he and I, he automatically assumed that I was a lot like him. And he brought us out big, tall, you know, 8-inch tall glasses filled almost to the brim. He goes, here, Scotty, I'd pour you one that was like mine. I figured that you drink better than John. And so there we were drinking full glasses of Jameson whiskey with something mixed into it. But we're going to have to do that again.
I've never seen anybody drink so much whiskey and still stand at the end of it like Barry Fitzgerald.
He's Irish. Hats off to the man.
Well, there is
he's
that.
Irish.
There is that. But I am looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the trip. So have you seen The Time?
Yeah, have I seen The Time, did you say?
Yes, have you seen The Time?
Yes, it's 10:59 and 0.010 seconds.
My
0.0909. Now it's 13, 14, 15.
Where
you know
has
what? We've got
that...
40. We've got 40 seconds left of this program, and the time has just flown by.
It has indeed. It's been a good show. I really enjoyed
it. It has. Folks, we want to thank you for being here. And you know what? We're going to be back next week, too. We're going to be here with the Intrepid Radio program, same bat time, same bat channel next Sunday night. And also with Rocky Stucci on Thursday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, the Situation Room.
No profanity.
And no profanity, because we don't normally use profanity, do we?
No, but you have used it quite a lot this evening. It has been noted.
I can't help myself. Say goodnight, John.
Good night, John. The sunshine made her cry. And you felt the baby move just yesterday. Hey, it's good to be back home again. Yes, it is. Sometimes this old feels like a long lost friend. Yes, it's good to be back home again. Oh, the time that I can lay this tired old body down. Feel your fingers feather soft upon me. Kisses.